Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hey everyone, my name is Carlos. I'm the founder and CEO of Product School. And today I'm here with the legendary Ken Norton, AKA Bring the Donuts. Hey Ken.
How you doing, Carlos?
Thanks for joining the show. I have to say that you were an inspiration for me before I started in product management.
Thank you very much. Glad to hear that.
I would like to learn a bit more about your own personal story. I know you started as a software engineer and then you started in product almost 20 years ago at Yahoo. You spent a lot of time at Google. So why don't you tell us a bit more about that?
I mean, this is a good reminder of how old I am. So thank you for that. But yeah, I graduated from college in 1993, which was only a couple of months after the Mosaic browser was released. And so I kind of looked at that and got super excited about the potential for, you know, I think what would become the web, and realized pretty quickly that I wanted that to be my career. So I started as a software engineer, started doing a lot of web development. You know, I think like a lot of product managers software engineers that became product managers, I didn't particularly like the programming side of engineering. I liked the building side. I gravitated much more to the problem. I tended to be a pretty good communicator. I tended to be the type of person that the engineers didn't mind that I went to meet with the customers and spend time with the sales org and the marketing org. And so I always was very curious about the other sides of the business. Moved out to San Francisco in 1996 to work for CNET, which was an very early web company. And that was where, you know, my interest in really becoming a product manager started to take fruition. But again, as you mentioned, it wasn't until I ended up at Yahoo that my job description was really PM. And you know what I found is I just really liked all of the aspects of building products and building businesses. I liked understanding customer problems. I liked thinking through marketing implications. I liked pricing. I liked packaging. I liked building. I liked design. And when you are sort of generalist and you don't fit in any one place, I think you naturally end up gravitating toward product management. You know, at the time, I feel like the profession was a little less refined. Different people meant different things when they talked about product management. So I think maybe a lot of what we'll talk about is how I've seen the role change over the years. But I realized pretty quickly as soon as I officially had the PM title that was the job for me, and you know, have been doing that now ever since, more than 20 years.
So what was product management like when you got that first PM job at Yahoo?
I think, you know, by then it was starting, at least in Silicon Valley tech companies, to have similar meaning. For the years up to that, it meant different things. I think there were old school Silicon Valley tech companies like Hewlett Packard or Intel, where the role might have been more marketing oriented, might have been more outbound. Microsoft has a role called program manager, which was more like what product management is today. They also have product managers that are not like product managers. And so there was starting to be this crystallization around what the job meant. One of the people I'd known for a long time when I first said I wanted to be a product manager, you know, his response was, "Oh, that's the person at Procter & Gamble who decides what color the Tide box is going to be." And in a lot of ways, he was right, because that was what, if you go way, way back to the 30s, you know, on a kind of a brand manager, product packaging manager, was responsible for consumer products, pricing, packaging, placement, you know, the four Ps. But what I saw begin to develop in Silicon Valley at that time, and you know, by the time I got to Yahoo, I think this had taken shape, was the role, as I least understand it today, is, you know, being much more oriented toward working with engineers to build somebody who's responsible for understanding the customer problem, the customer need from top to bottom, being accountable for delivering a product that's going to win. So I think by the time I got to Yahoo, it started to mean something. But even then, in those days at Yahoo, different parts of the company had different roles. There was still a producer role that was maybe a little bit more product managey. Other teams had product managers that are maybe less technical. So it was really only starting, I think, at that point to be something you could put on your resume and have people look at it and go, oh, I know what that job is.
And I need to ask you about your famous article, Break the Donuts, of course. How did that come to life? Why do you think it became so popular?
I don't know. I'll tell you why I wrote, How to Hire a Product Manager, which was, I think, the main one that a lot of people think of. I wrote it in 2005, and I had left Yahoo to go to a startup, a company called JotSpot. We were eventually acquired by Google. And I was the one person a lot of people thought of when they thought of product management. So they would naturally come to me and they'd say, hey, I've got a company and we're thinking about hiring a product manager. Can you give me an example of what a job description would look like? And usually what I would find is I could give them a job description, but I needed to spend a little bit more time explaining what I thought the characteristics of the job even were. And so rather than emailing around sample job descriptions, I said, well, why don't I come up with what I think the job entails and what a good candidate for this job looks like? And so I wrote, How to Hire a Product Manager, and I started emailing it around, and it began to kind of take up a life of its own. And so then I blogged it, and I think I just benefited from being first to market, quite frankly, and that there wasn't really anything else, probably if you search for product manager that described the role. And so that ended up kind of being the canonical example of this is what we think the job should be in tech, and these are how you evaluate candidates against that. So it's sort of a misnomer. I mean, it's called How to Hire a Product Manager, but I think it's much more of what is a product manager. I wish I'd probably, for SEO purposes, retitled it. But yeah, I think it kind of ended up being one of these things that was the first to articulate what a lot of people were thinking. And I have a lot of people now who tell me, look, I read that article and that's what made me decide when I was in college I wanted to be a product manager. That's what helped me realize that I had the skills to move into the job, which is, obviously tremendously gratifying.
Same here, actually. So I saw that you also spent 14 years at Google, and after your startup got acquired by Google, and especially the last years you spent some time with Google Ventures. So I want to learn a bit more about that potential transition from PM to VC.
Yeah, I joined Google through the acquisition, as you said, and I had in my mind that I would stay for 3 years. I was always kind of considered myself a startup guy. I'd never joined a company that had more than a few hundred people, and so I said I'm going to come to Google. I'm going to spend a few years here. It's a great company. I'll learn a lot, and then I'll go back to a startup. And now, 14 years later, I ended up leaving, and so it ended up being just a tremendous place to live and to work. And I had a bunch of different products and roles there. I PM'd a handful of products, and then about half of my tenure at Google, about 7 years in, I moved over to Google Ventures, and GV, as it's now known for those who don't know, is Alphabet's venture capital investing arm. So they invest essentially Alphabet's money in startups, companies from life sciences to frontier tech to enterprise to consumer. And GV is a little bit different than other what you might call corporate venture firms in that GV's job is to make money for Alphabet. They're not trying to be strategic. They're not trying to further Google's goals. They're not trying to find companies for Google to acquire. So in many ways, it's maybe a little bit more comparable to a traditional venture firm. My job there was a little bit unusual. I wasn't an investor. And I think if you were to look at my job at GV, it probably looks more similar to a PM director role at Google than it does any job anywhere else in venture. I had responsibility for a lot of products that we were building that helped us do essentially quant-based investing. I worked very closely with a team of engineers and statisticians there. And so even though I was in the venture world and getting exposed to all the great things that startups were doing, at the end of the day, I was still a product manager, even though if it may not have looked like it.
Well, that's really cool. I think you can probably apply the same mindset to different stages. And now I see that you're working as a PM coach. So in this new stage in your career, I want to know, what does a PM coach do and what does your day-to-day look like?
Yeah, great question. So I left Google in October. And as I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. I went through a bunch of different possible things that I thought I might want to do. And I kind of started with first principles and I said, what do I really like to do? And one of the things I really like to do is spend time with the product management community, coach, mentor product leaders, help people grow, watch them in their careers, work with startups. And so there was a kind of a moment where I was like, well, why don't I just do that? Like, why can't I just do that full time? And so I set out, you know, to essentially make that my job. I know work for myself. When it comes to coaching, I think maybe it's first worthwhile to draw the distinction between coaching and consulting or advising. So a consultant or an advisor is someone who you're essentially paying them for the benefit of their advice and their experience. They'll come in and they'll essentially tell you what they think they should do. Coaching is a little bit different. You don't hire a coach to get them to tell you what they would do. You hire a coach to work with them, to collaborate with them, to figure out what you should do in your unique situation. So a coach is more about asking questions than it is about giving answers. It's having someone in your corner who's done the job before, who can challenge you in certain ways, resolve conflict, get really deep into understanding what it is that you're challenged by, where you want to go, and how to get there. So what I do now is I work with a select group of product leaders primarily, meet with them twice a month, and they're encountering all sorts of challenges from somebody who's going from being an individual contributor to being a manager for the first time and needing to become a product leader, somebody who is now a chief product officer at a startup and realizing, it's a very different job than, being a PM director at a big company might have been. I'm there to help them figure out everything from how to be more effective in the day-to-day, how to think long-term about their careers, how to fall in love with the job, how to balance work and life, how to think more strategically if that's important to them, how to structure their team, work on a wide range of challenges and problems. I mean, anyone who's listening who is a product manager or product leader knows that there's a million different things you're struggling with, at any given time. And so that's what I do now is I work with folks on these challenges.
I have a coach and I wish I had invested in my coach earlier. So I totally see the benefits of having a bouncing board sometimes or a sounding board. In your experience, at what point do you think it's important for a PM to invest in coaching?
I think just like you said, I look back on my career and the people who were most effective, who helped me the most were coaches. They may not have had that title, but they acted as coaches. So I think, having someone there who's in your corner, from the earliest days is beneficial. So I think, like you, I wish that I'd worked with a coach way earlier in my career. I wasn't always very thoughtful about where I wanted to go, how I was thinking about the next 3, 5, 10 years of my career, and having someone there to help me think through that, to challenge me, to just even force me to confront those questions, I think would have been really beneficial. The type of coach you might get at different stages of your career might be different. The type of coaching that I do for product leaders and VPs of product and director level folks who are much more their scope of responsibility is different. Maybe a different set of types of challenges than you might get when you're in your first year as a PM, moving from marketing to PM or graduating from college to become a BM. But I think the type of coach you might need as a CEO of a big company is different, but it's hard to imagine that at any stage of your career, a coach might not be helpful. There's a sports analogy there, which is whether you're playing, high school basketball or the NBA, coaches are there and they serve an important purpose and they help make you better and they improve at any step, any stage.
Would you say are some best practices for someone to really get the most out of a coach and the other way around for a coach to really be able to be productive?
Yeah, I think there's a few things that I've learned. I think one is clarity that we're a good fit for each other. And so I spend time upfront. I do, usually an hour with anybody who's thinking about hiring me to think through what challenges they're facing. What do they hope to get out of coaching? What are they looking? What are their goals for a year, 3 years out? And to make sure that there's a good fit between what I think I offer and what they think they need. And so part of that is trying to be concrete around where do you see yourself going, you know, in a year, in 3 years? What are the real challenges for you right now that you need help working through? And so a lot of that exploratory conversation is just making sure that that person has thought through that. Ongoing for success, I think it's important that there be some sense of goals. I mean, people are paying me, so they should be getting something out of it. So they should have a sense of, this is what I want when I look back 3 months, 6 months, a year from now to have gotten better at, to have developed, and I know I'm measuring success. And then I think another really important key is just communication and transparency. You know, if you feel like we're working on issues that aren't the important issues for you, like, you need to tell me that. If you feel like, you know, you didn't quite understand something that came up last session and it's been gnawing at you and you want to go deeper in that, you tell me that. You know, if there's something that came up and you feel like it's way more urgent than anything else we're going to talk about, tell me that. And I'll make sure that I adapt the conversation for what is most valuable to you.
You know, one of the reasons why I think it took me so long to invest in coaching is because I was afraid of being vulnerable. I was also too cheap. Yep. I thought that, why do I have to pay someone to tell me what to do if I'm the one who is going to do it, right?
Yeah.
But having that trust foundation with someone and know that I have space where I can share things that I wouldn't even share with a colleague or even with my wife, you know, it's really, really powerful.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, for me, part of what I found was valuable to me in my career was being able to develop good connections with people. And it's part of maybe what made me an effective PM. I'm sort of an introvert, which means I'm much more comfortable one-on-one than I am, you know, controlling a room or, you know, leading a big team in public. And so I think I developed a lot of skills that helped me, you know, with people figure out what is the real problem here. I mean, the same skill that I developed over years with a customer to help me understand, like, what's the actual problem they're dealing with. It serves me very well in coaching. You know, I will say also that one trend that I certainly am benefiting from, and I think is important, is more and more companies willing to pay for their employees to have coaches. The vast majority of my clients are their company is paying for all or some of my time. So I think it's something that's definitely seen as being valuable, and from a career and from a personnel development standpoint, it makes perfect sense from the company standpoint.
I agree. We're in the education business as well, and a lot of our students get reimbursed by their employers. And we recently published a survey where we saw that 78 of PMs mentioned that learning and development was their number one priority as a perk, even above equity. And only 40% of the companies today are investing somehow in their employees' learning and development. So I think there's a huge opportunity, and that gap is being closed.
Yeah, it's something I think that's particularly affects PMs, because you may have a 120-person engineering organization and much more maturity around mentoring and training. And then you may have 8 PMs and there's not really a great mentor there for them. There's probably not someone very senior they can learn from elsewhere in the company. There's not a structured learning and development program for these PMs. And a lot of times as product managers, we're kind of on our own. It's a pretty lonely job. And I think that's a lot of what I try to bring to the table is, look, you may not have that support inside your company because the company's too small or moving too fast or growing too quickly. But I can provide that for you as someone who's fully invested in you from outside the company.
So Ken, in your experience working with different levels of PMs, what would you say are the main challenges that they are going through, let's say for an entry or mid-level PM all the way up to a CPO?
Yeah, I think there's like a few, growth stages in product management. I think, you know, starting out as a PM, there's a whole set of challenges around just getting comfortable in the job, understanding how you should be spending your time, learning how to work effectively with engineers, learning how to work effectively with product designers, learning how to think about how to make day-to-day decisions, how much time you should allocate to, you know, what's coming next to what's coming now. And so I think there's that sort of early career set of challenges that I think are probably pretty familiar to anyone, is really just like, I'm trying to find my sea legs here in this job. It is unlike anything else, and there isn't a playbook. What do I need to do? And so I would say that's the sort of first set of challenges you face. Then there's probably another stage, which is you're now having bigger impact. So now you are given a product that is at a much bigger scale than maybe what you started out with. Or maybe you started your career and you owned a piece of a product or a small product. Now you're being given something that has a much higher platform, which means you need to think about, how do I manage up effectively? How do I tell a story that executives are going to get excited about? How do I collaborate with peers and other parts of the company who may or may not share my point of view on my product? Then I think the next stage is really all about moving into a leadership role. So this is maybe a formal management role, maybe not, but we are kind of putting into a place now where you have changing from trying to have impact through just yourself as an individual contributor to now being having impact through others. Managing up is pretty effective. Being able to figure out how to balance your time between thinking more strategically, thinking day-to-day, hiring now becomes an important part of the job that maybe before just people showed up and you interviewed them, but now you're the one that's making those decisions. And so I think that's probably the third stage. The fourth stage is now to really becoming the head of head of product. So that could be now you're a VP of product at a startup. It could be that you are leading product at a big division in a large tech company. So now you are learning how to manage managers. You're learning how to figure out how to pivot from spending the majority of your time on day-to-day product stuff to the majority of your time leading a team and thinking more strategically about the future. And then I think there's another stage, which is really when something else comes next. That may be fine for everyone. Other people may be like, look, I'm happy to be a chief product officer for my entire career. Other people say, hey, now's the time where I want to think about becoming a general manager. How do I move beyond just being responsible for product? Or I'm going to now become a CEO. How do I grow my skill set from being the product leader to being the company's leader?
And are you seeing that transition from the product leader to the company's leader in the same organization, or are you seeing also people who at some point decide to start their own companies?
It's both. I have a set of clients that are the de facto product leader at startups. And so they may not have the chief product officer title, but they've been told that it's their job to lose. And so they're like, hey, look, you're growing really fast. You're the person right now. And, you know, we don't need to hire a VP of product, but at some point in the future, when we do, hopefully it's you. And so that's a pretty interesting place to be, because you're hoping that job is yours, but you also need to figure out what it means to earn that job and to show that you're ready for that. Other people, you know, I have a lot of clients that are director level, VP level at big companies who are thinking about, hey, you know, in 2 to 3 years, I'm ready for that VP of product or chief product officer job at a startup. Or maybe I'm thinking more, 7 years from now, I want to be a CEO. What does that look like? What skills stand between me and that? How should I be thinking about my career between now and then?
So thinking about your own career, what would you say are some of those marks of leadership that really helped you grow to where you are today?
That's a good question. I think for me, curiosity was a very important part of what helped me develop my career and helped me, I think, stay relevant, and just an interest in all points of view, wanting to understand every problem from different people's angles, being willing to ask questions. I mean, my job now is a lot of being willing to ask questions, and I've never stopped asking questions. And, you know, being willing to sort of understand when you don't know the answer and say you don't know the answer and figure out how to get to the answer. Those are some things that I think, you know, have definitely served me well in my career. You know, when I think about in general what makes good leaders, I think of people who are good listeners, you know, active listeners, people who are good storytellers, effective communicators, willing to be wrong. I think one of the signs of a great CEO or a great leader is somebody who's willing to say, I don't know the answer. I don't know. Tell me this. Teach me this. I think there's probably a pretty close correlation between good leaders and being willing to say when they know the answer and when they don't. Writing, great writing, I think is an undervalued skill that I benefited from my liberal arts education and served me well, but I've been able to see how being a good writing communicator has served people well in this profession and is a mark of a good leader.
I can't agree more. The other day I tweeted that PMs don't write code. They write copy.
Yeah, that's right. And all facets of communication, right? It's it's not just being a clear writer. It's understanding the point you want to get across, bringing people along on a story. When you're conveying a product vision, you're telling a story of what the world looks like in the future when you've won. And you want to bring people there and have them look around you and see what you see. And so a lot of communication is not just the one-to-one communication, working effectively with your eng manager, being able to talk to sales, being able to talk to customers, but a much more strategic way to tell stories that other people get motivated and excited about and understand, and that they can then use to make decisions in the day-to-day around what should I do and what should I not do.
I love that. And you know, one of the things that I like the most is that you don't really need to get a specific title or ask for permission to do that. A lot of people will ask me, how do I get better at writing or at speaking? Yeah. Well, by doing, right? By getting yourself, putting yourself in that position and trying.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think for people who ask me, you know, hey, how do I get into product management? Because, you know, I've been an engineer and I want to be a product manager, but every job says you already have to have been a product manager for 3 years, but I don't know how to be a product manager for 3 years if nobody hired me to be. You know, it's much easier to move into the role inside the company, right? It's much easier to, particularly in a startup, raise your hand and say, like I did, I want to do more of that. Can I help out over there? You know, what? How about I take on that role? How about I write the PRD? How about I, you know, take on a little bit of the job and try it on for size? Mostly in a startup, that works pretty well because people already know what you're good at. Like, they're happy to have you volunteer to do work that no one's doing, and it gives you the opportunity to try it on in a way that you might not get to if you're formally, you know, applying for a job that requires a set of experience and a certain title.
Well, Ken, it's been awesome to chat with you. Where can I find more about you online?
You can find more about me online at bringthedonuts.com.
That's beautiful. That quote is going to chase you forever.
I'm owning it.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.